is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There are cases where you know something is wrong the moment you hear the very first detail. And then there are cases like this, where every new detail doesn't clarify the story. It deepens it, it darkens it, stretches it out into something so tangled you start to wonder how anyone in this girl's life ever thought she stood a chance. Because as much as we want to believe families are one thing or another, stable or unstable, good or bad, this case shows us what happens when a child grows up at the crossroads of not one broken family, but two. When both sides of the DNA chain carry so much unresolved trauma, it feels anger, blame, addiction, secrecy, and denial that it practically hums around them. When the adults in the room are so wrapped up in their own battles that the child in the middle is treated more like a witness than a person. That was Anna Kempner. Before she died, she was already drowning, not in water, not on a cruise ship, but in the decades of chaos that came packaged with her family. So let's take a deep breath and walk through this, not as a cold timeline, not as a list of bullet points, but as the story of a life lived between two storms, because the public wants to know how an 18-year-old ends up hidden under a bed in a cruise ship. But if you really want to understand that, you have to look at the world she was living in long before that cruise ever left the port, and how she was failed time and time again by the adults in her life. You start with the moment her body was found, because that's where the noise began. It wasn't complicated. It wasn't ambiguous. It wasn't the kind of thing where you go, maybe, maybe not. She was found, or wasn't found, in a bed. She wasn't found on the floor. She wasn't found anywhere someone dies naturally, you know, because there's so many cases where 18-year-olds just drop dead naturally. She was found under the bed, wrapped in a blanket, partially covered in life vests, hidden, deliberately hidden, while her 14-year-old brother slept 4 feet above her. That alone tells you the story isn't very simple. That alone tells you someone acted after she died. That alone tells you someone in that cabin, her own family, knows exactly what happened in the hours before that discovery. And that's where the FBI began, right in that cabin, right in the middle of the family Anna was traveling with. And here's the thing. You can't understand what happened in that room without understanding the people inside it. And that's where this story cracks wide open. And I want to get your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube if you're not already there. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. You will find us. While you're there, please do hit subscribe. And then, yes, your thoughts in the comment section on this case. Because this wasn't a traditional family cruise. This wasn't a clean nuclear family out for a week of sunshine and bonding. And you know what? That's okay. Not many families actually are that anymore. But unfortunately, there's too many like this, where chaos is the norm for a lifetime. This was complicated. Multi-branch family systems that had been splitting, reforming, and fracturing for almost 20 years. A father with 3 marriages, a mother with her own history of collapse, step-siblings with tension, conflict, and fear woven between them. Custody battles simmering under the surface, a stepmother now invoking the Fifth Amendment, a stepbrother who's now a suspect, and a grandmother and uncle screaming for justice while the adults inside found. They remain mostly silent. This is not a normal, healthy family dynamic. This is a web of unresolved everything. Let's start with mom, because she put her entire life on display in a 13-minute TikTok video that is now already part of the public conversation where anyone can watch. You can like it or you can't. It doesn't really matter. If you've watched it, understand this. It's not a grieving mother's plea for answers. It's an avalanche of decades of pain, anger, blame, and instability pouring out in real time. In her own words, and I stress in her own words because we're not adding anything, she tells the world she moved away from her daughter for a fiancé who promised money and a fresh start. Surprise! That didn't happen. She says she thought she'd just be gone for a year and said she stayed away for 14. As if she has no agency or control over her own life. Well, my fiance did this and he lied to me, and now what do I do? Whoa, I'm gonna color my hair stark red. Make hundreds of TikTok videos about yourself. I don't know. Oh, wait, you did all that. She tells us she fell into drug addiction for 2.5 to 3 years. She tells us she struggled with severe depression and crippling anxiety. She tells us she quit drugs cold turkey without rehab. She tells us she no longer has her teeth due to gum disease. She says she inherited that part. Couldn't possibly be anything else that makes people lose their teeth that has to do with addictions that have already been admitted. It's gum disease. She tells us she lost access to her other children. Oh, that's not a sign of anything. She tells us she served jail time for truancy involving her son. So basically, she says she makes really great decisions. Oh, wait, that's the opposite of what she tells us. But she takes no accountability for those decisions. It's always somebody else. Every single line of her video is another piece of life that didn't just go sideways. It went off a cliff. And there's nothing wrong with a parent having a troubled past. Plenty of people fight their way back from addiction, financial trauma, bad relationships, or mental health battles. No shame in that. But this video of hers, it doesn't read like closure. It doesn't sound like someone who processes their past. It sounds like someone still living inside it, someone who hasn't fully climbed out of their own storm long enough to build a safe shelter for a child. Good job, Mom. You failed. So don't be shocked when horrible shit happens. And yeah, she blames Anna's father for the distance between them. She says he kept Anna away, drove a wedge between them, weaponizing lies to turn Anna against her, never looking once at her own behavior and going, maybe you're not a great place for a child to be around. And it's possible that he did. Who knows? The paternal side has its own deep problems, but the mother's video also shows a pattern that can't be ignored. Every bad outcome is someone else's fault. Every loss is blamed outward. There's no ownership, no stability, and absolutely no sign that Anna had a dependable maternal anchor in any way, shape, or form from that 13-minute narcissistic self-rant. In my opinion. So if Anna wasn't safe in her mother's world, emotionally, logistically, or structurally, maybe she was safe in her father's. No, she wasn't safe there either, because the father's side of the family was a storm of its own. Three marriages, three households, three sets of step-siblings, and a past that included a 2008 sexual violence injunction filed by a woman on behalf of her minor daughter. An injunction that was dismissed, yes, but still part of the documented history that can't just simply disappear. Years later, that same father married into the same family, marrying the daughter of the woman who filed the injunction. That daughter, Tabitha, became Anna's second stepmother. Was that the child that was listed in that accusation that was dismissed, the 2008 sexual violence injunction? We don't know the answer to that, but if we put dots together, I don't know. Unless it's another kid in the house that suddenly became legal. But we don't 1,000% know the answer to that question. All we can do is kind of make some assumptions here. Years later, that same father married into the same family, marrying the daughter of the woman who filed the injunction. That marriage ended. Then he married Chantel. This is the woman who was on the cruise with Anna, and brought her three children into the home. And one of those children The 16-year-old stepson is now officially identified in mainstream media, including the Associated Press, as a suspect in Anna's death. Let me repeat that. A suspect, not a minor being interviewed, not part of the investigation, a suspect. And you add the stepmother's Fifth Amendment filing to this, a legal declaration stating that her testimony could incriminate herself or her minor child. That storm thickens a little bit. The stepbrother's biological father has filed emergency custody to remove his younger daughter from the home because he fears the environment Anna lived in is dangerous. That's not a rumor. That's not speculation. That's a legal action filed in a court of law. So here you have it. On one side, a mother drowning in her own trauma. On the other side, a father drowning in his own history. And in between, Anna, left to navigate the emotional debris field of her own family. And if that were all, it would be tragedy enough. But then come the voices, the people who didn't live in the home but saw the cracks anyway. Her grandmother, Barbara, believes Anna was murdered. She has posted online calling out the paternal household directly, saying the truth is being hidden, that she has been kept in the dark. She doesn't doubt. She doesn't question. She accuses strongly, emotionally, and repeatedly. Her uncle, on the Donahue side, posted a now-deleted viral message accusing members of the paternal household, including the stepbrother, of concealing Anna's death. Whether accurate or not, that message shows you something about the internal landscape. This family is not on the same page, not emotionally, not legally, not morally. And then there's Joshua, the ex-boyfriend of Anna. Now, he's one of the most important voices in this case, not because he knows what happened on the ship, but because he says he knows what was happening before the ship. He describes a stepbrother obsessed with Anna. He describes a FaceTime call where he says he saw the stepbrother climb onto a sleeping Anna. He says Anna was terrified that she didn't feel safe at home, that she wouldn't sleep at her friend's house, that she would sleep at her friend's house to avoid being alone with the stepbrother. His father echoes those allegations. None of this is proven. None of this is confirmed by investigators, but it adds to a chorus that is now impossible to ignore. And you know what happened? In the dynamics of that household, somebody, I'm going to guess parents, who are booking the cruise, who have the choice of who's staying in what room, who are doing the logistical planning of this. Someone made the choice, hey, let's put Anna and the stepbrother that has these allegations against him from the boyfriend. Now, we don't know if they knew about these allegations when they booked the cruise and just chose to ignore them. If Anna spoke up ever and said, hey, I really don't want to stay in the same room as this guy that is creepy and seems to have a thing for me. We don't know if any of that took place. But somebody made the choice to say, hey, let's put these two in the same room together. Good decision-making right there. Because you have at this point at least six independent voices, mother, grandmother, uncle, ex-boyfriend, ex-boyfriend's father, and the stepbrother's biological father, all describing the environment Anna lived in as unstable, unsafe, or full of hostility. That is not coincidence. That is called a pattern. All allegations. Okay? That's to be clear on all of this, all alleged. And then the final, quietest detail, Anna's 14-year-old brother slept inches above her body while she lay dead and hidden beneath him. That tells us this wasn't chaos, this was controlled action. Someone waited until the lights were off. Someone waited until the others were asleep. Someone moved her body quietly in the dark. That child didn't hear her die. He didn't hear furniture thrown. He didn't hear screaming. He didn't hear anything that caused him to alert anyone. That's why the FBI is reconstructing that night minute by minute. And while all of this unfolds, her father, the man at the center of all the relational firestorms, the marriages, the custody conflicts, the injunction, the accusations, the blended family, remains silent, offering no pleas for justice, no emotional pleas, no public narratives, no explanations. Silence is not guilt. Making bad choices is not a crime. But in cases like this, silence is a choice, and that choice matters. What we're left with once you strip away the noise is simple. Anna lived in two worlds, both broken. Her maternal home was full of addiction, mental health struggles, instability, and distance. Her paternal home was full of conflict, legal battles, and now a homicide investigation, all allegedly. She did not have a stable anchor anywhere in her life. She lived in a storm. And she died in one. This is not a story about one bad actor. This is a story about a young woman failed by a system of adults across the spectrum who loved her but couldn't stabilize themselves. Some who protected themselves more than they protected her, and some who now point fingers in every direction except inward. When the family finally speaks, when the autopsy is released, when the truth of what happened in that cabin becomes visible, the shock will ripple, but it will not erase the truth that's already obvious. Anna didn't die in a vacuum. She died in a family system where chaos was the norm, where conflict was constant, where blame was currency, where protection was inconsistent, where secrets lived longer than relationships, where everyone talks and nobody listens, where the adults were too busy fighting each other to protect the girl caught in the middle. All allegedly. Anna was hidden in death. But she was hidden in life too, lost between two worlds, slipping between the cracks of two families who were too consumed with their own storms to see her clearly. Her death is a tragedy. But the life around it, the war of voices that erupted afterwards, shows an even sadder truth. She was surrounded by conflict long before she was surrounded by investigators. Anna Kepner deserved better than every adult who failed her on every side. And when the truth comes out, and it will, it won't just expose what happened on that ship. It will expose everything that happened long before she ever stepped aboard. We see this in so many families, in so many situations, and so many times, no one steps up and says, yeah, no more. We're not going to let this happen. And the sad part is, when you look at a lot of child custody cases and situations where the mother is this, the dad is this, these would be pretty good parents compared to a lot of how horrible the system can be. Yeah, I mean, that's reality. This case doesn't necessarily scream CPS, come walk in and rescue anybody. Not that they really do that very well anyhow. This, as far as everything we know right now, would all be acceptable behavior. Like, well, you know, got a roof over her head, there's food coming in, she's alive. Some people just shouldn't have kids. Some people shouldn't be allowed to have kids. Yeah. Give me your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski if you're not already there. Please hit subscribe as well. Again, everyone is innocent until proven guilty. These are the allegations that are coming out. These are the reports that are coming out. We're trying to digest them, discuss them, and express our opinion on them. What is yours? Tell me in the comments section. I'm Tony Brewski. We'll talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.